injured 2-litre bi-turbo wild track 4x4 and kindly reviewed by Lawrence Meaney.
All right, so I would like to preface this by saying that I'm in no way, shape, or form a Ford fanboy. Keep that in mind.
Who is not a Ford fanboy?
Yeah, I was about to say, who in the world?
All right, so I'm quite sure you guys have all been to a braai or a social gathering. At some point, the conversation talks to who has the best double cab. All right, so let me just start off by saying that I'm in no way, shape, or form a Ford fanboy. It's very important to remember. So you guys have all been to a braai or a social gathering or something where at some point the conversation always turns to which manufacturer has the best double cab. And I'm not personally seeing these.
How many beers are you down before you have the discussion? Which is the best?
You'll be surprised. And I've personally seen these escalate from Hilux versus Ford into full-blown fisty fights. You know, it's crazy. It's an interesting question because when it comes to double cabs, every year that title seems to change hands. And at this exact moment, I feel that Ford has the upper hand here. The Ford Ranger Wildtrak, in its current incarnation that we have now on the market, is probably the best double cab that you can get for your money. In terms of exterior styling, interior equipment, technology, and then, of course, what really sets this vehicle apart is the engine and the drivetrain. So this new Wildtrak is fitted with the engine and drivetrain that are fitted to all of their new big vehicles, which I've now had the pleasure of driving. So you're going to get the same 2-litre bi-turbo and 10-speed automatic transmission in the Raptor, it's in the new Everest, and it's in the Wildtrak. And I have to admit that this is probably the best driving double cab. It's the best drivetrain as a whole in this vehicle size segment. And unfortunately, it's the draw card when it comes to this argument of who has the best double cab. So
I have one question there, Lawrence. With regard to that, let's just say hypothetically I have the previous model. Is this worth maybe, or is it specific for people who, for instance, want to go off roading versus, you know, if I'm just using it as a daily driver, is this something?
This is the interesting thing is, and it's something I mentioned in the article that's up on site. This Wildtrak will be at home in Melrose Arch or on the farm. It is capable everywhere. You know, the problem with a lot of double cabs is that they're either a workhorse or they're soft. Yeah. And, you know, they're meant for urban environment. So where the Wildtrak comes in, it's a good mix of both. So you have essentially what is an SUV with a load bay. Leather interior, all of the tech, Sync 3 Apple CarPlay, USB ports, and a 230-volt inverter inside the car. So you can actually run, you know, electrical appliances in the vehicle. It's that kind of thing.
Don't tell anybody. And then you might want to run a hairdryer.
Yeah, if you were that way inclined. Then you have, of course, the drivetrain, which is the big talking point about this vehicle, and the 4x4 system. This is the only thing that separates this from the Raptor is the Raptor has the Fox suspension system, which sort of gives you an idea of just how well this car drives. Engine's going to put out 157 kilowatts, 500 newton meters, and you're still going to get 8.1 liters per 100 kilometers on a tank of diesel. And that's the thing that got me completely is this is a diesel, but when you get in and you push the start button, it sounds like a petrol. It's that quiet. It really is an amazing piece of tech. And, you know, in the double cab stakes, it's 753,000 rand. You know, if someone gave me the choice between a Hilux and this, I'm going to take this every time. Sorry, Hilux.
Yeah, so what about Amarok against that?
Well, you see, At the bottom of my article, I said I'm not going to include things like the Amarok because, well, in a few years, the Amarok is going to be made by Ford anyway. So, you know, currently they don't have a small diesel engine vehicle with the same level of tech and luxury. They only have the 3-liter V6. I'm not going to talk about the Navara and the X-Class because, well, they're technically the same thing. And, yeah, Isuzu's still got some big shoes to fill. So at the moment, at the top of the list, you have Hilux and Ford, and that's the battle that's going to rage in, you know, forever.
I just want to know, how did you get to, what, 8.2 liters per 100?
Driving like an old man.
Because I reviewed one of those, a four-wheel drive last year, also with a turbo engine, and I struggled to get it below 10 liters per 100 in my normal driving.
Even with me bombing through the outback just down the road here from me, going off-roading and driving at high speed, I still managed to get, you know, just close to the 8.6. And I think that is what ultimately surprised me, because when I had the Raptor on test and I took that down to Durban, I couldn't crack 9.
Wow.
And that was on the open freeway. So that was one of the things that I was looking at. So really, in all honesty, at this point in time, the Ranger has the crown for best double cab in the country. Fight me in the comments.
Well, I agree with you. I also found it objectively very, very difficult to fault last year. I kind of came to the same conclusion that that's probably the best balanced of the top line buckies out there at the moment.
And well, for the price you can
get it. Let's be honest. You know, the Amarok doesn't feature in this battle, even in car search, right, Wandy? Because the top two most searched for double cabs are Toyota Hilux and Ford Ranger.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, Amarok does feature in third, but I mean, the sheer dominance that the Ford Ranger and Hilux has on the Bucky segment is just, you know, it's unparalleled. They are fan favorites. And like Lauren said, you know, they cause fights at Braz, wherever exactly. Lauren stays.
Next year, though, that title could change hands because we have a new Hilux on the way. So, yeah, maybe things will change if Toyota comes to the party and changes the interior and maybe spices the outside up a bit. You know, we might have a new title contender. But at this point in time, Ranger all the way. Not a fanboy.
Well, there you go. Lawrence Meany, not a fanboy. Thank you, Lawrence, for the review of the Ford Ranger 2-liter bi-turbo wild track 4x4. Go and have a look on autotrader.co.za. Go to reviews and you will find the review by Lawrence of this Ford Ranger. And go and judge it for yourself. Give some comments to Lawrence. I'm sure he'll defend his position, and I'm sure he has slowly but surely become a Ford fanboy. In other auto news, Mini SE is to become SA's least expensive electric car. I mean, it's still not cheap at 642,000 Rand for the Trim S and the flagship Trim L to be 722,000 Rand. But I'm more interested in the fact that we're actually going to have another small electric car besides the BMW i3. Martin, what does the BMW i3 go for in to this Mini at 642 entry?
Let me verify that for you quickly, George. But
I think it's in the mid 700s, right?
Checked, it was around 720,000 for the entry level i3 fully electric.
Okay, so you can get a top spec Trim L Mini for the price of an entry level BMW i3 electric car, which is brilliant because now we're starting with the electric car wars, and it's really nice to be talking about this. So this Mini Electric is expected to touch down in South Africa before the end of this year, being 2020 that we are in. Don't forget, 2020 is not sailed by yet, the Mini Electric is supposed to be here before the end of the year. And 642,000 Rand, 722,000 Rand. In terms of spec, Lawrence, what can this car do and why should people even consider it?
Well, it's a Mini, so it's smaller than the i3. I actually have to go and check and see what kind of tech and stuff that they've included from, but from the pictures I can see, it looks like all the standard fare that you get in the normal Mini, where things like the BMW i3, I'm quite sure that you will all agree with me, it's a little bit sparse inside there with its plant-based Kevlar door panels and stuff.
And it looks weird.
Let me just tell you, BMW gave me the i3 to drive for a week a while ago, and I absolutely loved that i3. So, you know, I'm not going to judge the i3 until I get to drive this Mini, but I loved that i3, you know, and I drove the Tesla.
It's very avant-garde.
Yeah.
From the pictures that I've seen, it looks like they've retained everything that's Mini in the car. So you still get that big binnacle in the middle with all of the infotainment and all the normal screens. But I think you're just missing the actual engine and gear lever.
Well, they've turned it into screens, right?
This is one thing that really stands out to me is the range of this Mini, which I think might become a problem. I'm not sure what the range is in the i3, but this Mini says, they claim that it's going to do around 217 Ks on a full charge. So,
i3 is around 230.
Yeah, i3 is so not much better.
It's actually not that.
Not much better, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they use the same mechanical bits. The Mini is essentially, the Mini Cooper SE is essentially the engine and drivetrain and battery systems from an i3 packed into a Mini.
Oh, there it is.
There you go.
It's heavier because it's steel construction instead of carbon fiber. And I don't think it's quite as space efficient either. But apart from that, it's basically an i3 in a Mini body shell.
Well, yeah, then the only last thing to say about this Mini is I don't like the rims. It has got really not great rims. I was going to use another word, but those rims balance to me. Maybe when they're spinning, they'll look better, but I don't like the rims.
No.
But have a look at the rims. Out of 10, and then we move on to a very interesting story, but out of 10, Lawrence, what would you give those rims?
Probably a 2 because they remind me of the Persian Citroen C3 Aircross.
Yes, you're right. Martin, out of 10, what do you give those rims?
I'd give the rims a solid 6, actually.
Wow.
Because they remind me of my youth when asymmetric wheels were just the thing.
Wendy, what's your vote on these rims?
I give them a 4. I don't know why electric car companies keep doing this. I don't know why we have to use rims that are, you know, this weird sort of assembly to identify them in an electric car. Just do the normal rims and we'll all be happy.
Mini is not an electric car company. Just saying. Anyway, Mercedes-Benz walked away from Tesla in 2014, and in Daimler, which bears the name of the man who invented the modern car 134 years ago, bought nearly 10% in Tesla in May 2009 in a deal which provided $50 million as a lifeline for this struggling startup. The investment gave Mercedes engineers an inside view of how Elon Musk was willing to launch technology that wasn't perfect and then repeatedly upgrade it using smartphone-style over-the-air updates, paying little regard to early profitability. Mercedes engineers helped Tesla develop its first Model S premium sedan in exchange for access to Tesla's partially hand-assembled battery packs. But in 2014, Daimler decided to sell its stake in Tesla and had doubts over Tesla's approach and that it could be industrialized at scale. Well, Tesla proved everybody frickin' wrong, including Daimler. And Tesla then went on to pioneer new approaches in manufacturing design in software and electronic architecture, which enabled it to introduce innovations faster than any other rival, leaving analysts to draw comparisons with Apple. Because let's face it, the Tesla is an iPhone on wheels. It is just beautiful and it works. So so I suppose the debate here, and you know, let's spend 2 or 3 minutes talking about this particular thing, and that is Elon Musk is on the edge or the razor blade edge of what Mercedes-Benz engineers call a negative aggression, as one dealer will rightly point out, but that he pushes technology to its edge. He's not scared of launching technology that isn't perfect, right, Wendy?
Yeah, so I think this case of Mercedes and Tesla is a clear example of just the direction that the world is going. you know, Elon Musk, he was almost like a maverick in the industry. He really, really, really at the forefront of everything as innovation. And he puts that first above and all, like, above profits, above anything. It's to provide a great experience for consumers. And Daimler, they just, you know, they're a more developed and established company that wants to sort of trial things slowly before they can, you know, roll it out across the entire, model range. And I think that's basically the downfall of Mercedes in this respect, is that they just couldn't handle the pace that Tesla was moving in.
Yeah, you know, and that is why a company like Apple and a company like Tesla become so successful, because they're not afraid to push the envelope. They're not afraid to launch technologies that aren't entirely perfect. If you remember the initial iPhone back in 2007, when it was launched, they had footwork on that stage when Steve Jobs made the introduction of the iPhone, because not everything worked. And Tesla, I'm not proposing that people put substandard products out in the market, but then the very, very quick and rapid iteration of bringing the product to perfection by using your user base as as the feedback is important. And I think Steve Jobs and both Elon Musk have done exactly the same thing. And that's what you're referring to, right, Wandy?
Yeah, I think it almost takes me back to the story we did about BMW offering upgrade services over, you know, over the air, or online rather.
Yeah.
What Tesla has here is it's not necessarily putting out a substandard product, but they're putting out a product which can be, you know, almost enhanced over time, which is not, you know, it's not adding additional cost to the consumer. It's giving them a base product which they basically trial, and they can see how to, you know, better manage and better prepare it and make it for the end user, which I think is, it's such a simple concept, which simple concepts in user interface design, which I think, you know, they've got it spot on. I don't think anybody else will be a threat to them because of it.
Okay, coolio. Martin has somebody at his gate to collect. What I believe is a review car, right, Martin?
Yes, George. It's a Jeep Wrangler. I just spent a week with it, and they're coming to take it away now.
I know. All right. So let's look at Martin's chair for 5 minutes while he goes and stick yourself on mute there, Martin, and you know, go and give the car back. And then we'll hear about that Jeep Wrangler, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks, right?
Yep. I'll see you again now.